Fine.
Snickety snicked.
Snickety snick. All right, so this is a part-time fanboy, and this is Christian Horn, and I am here with Paul Edwards, and
hello.
We are here to discuss the Days of Future podcast, the X-Men, the latest X-Men film.
Dude, that was a nice turn of phrase there.
Yeah.
Days of Future podcast.
Guess what the title of this episode is going to be.
Oh yeah.
So, any thoughts to start off with? I mean, you know what? Why don't we start with, like, just how, like, the X-Men in general? Like, have you always been, like, an X-fan, or... like, what is your experience with the X-Men and, like, the X-Men comics?
Let's see. I think I jumped on with the X-Men in the sort of mid-80s.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was, like, it was definitely post, Phoenix saga, the Dark Phoenix saga. So, you know, I missed sort of, you know, the grand... era there, but you know, I later caught up on that. But definitely Claremont was my introduction, you know.
Oh yeah, same as me. I mean, I was diehard, like, because in the 80s, like, the X-Men, it wasn't like Spider-Man or Captain America or like even the Avengers, right? I mean, they were sort of like, they weren't considered like A-listers, right?
No, not really. I mean, Wolverine hadn't become the, marketing juggernaut that, you know, he later became. Although, you know, he was, you know, getting
he was on his
pretty,
way.
He was getting to be pretty popular by the time I started picking it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is, too, they were, for the most part, pretty contained in their adventures, you know, things that were going on inside.
The good old days.
Things that were going on inside the X-Men, you know, were carried, you know, it carried over to the next month's X-Men book, you know.
Yeah,
and, I think where things really started, you know, diverging was the success of that Wolverine limited series there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where things really started to take off. They started doing more, you know, little mini series with the individual characters, and then they split, you know, and started having other X books, you know, for a while.
Oh my
it seemed
God.
Like everything, you know, every Marvel book had an X in front of it, you know.
Do you remember they were marketing Spider-Man as like Marvel's non-mutant superhero or something?
That's right.
It's just like the mutant madness had, like, in the 90s just gone absolutely berserk, like crazy. Yeah, it seemed like the X-Men were actually the only thing propping Marvel up for a long time. Yes, exactly. I agree with you. Yeah.
I mean, he has. My dog has strong feelings on the X-verse.
Don't we all?
But he's like X-Force. Come on. But you know,
Rob Liefeld's my boy. Yeah.
I stopped reading it, around the time I think it was Inferno or something like that.
Where, oh, really?
Like, you know, they started. I mean, it seemed like they just sort of kept going back to the Dark Phoenix well.
Yeah,
few many times, and like once they started doing that again and again, I just kind of got fed up with it, and like I'm not really, and plus the continuity just started just getting really difficult for me to live with.
You're not kidding.
Yeah, but I give it's nice. It's made me more tolerant, you know, in my older years now of things that are sort of out of continuity.
Yeah,
because good Lord, you know
exactly.
For a while, I had no idea who was, like, it's like, okay, wait, he's his son, or is he his dad, and is he from this timeline, or is he from, you know, the other timeline, and, yeah, it, it it just got crazy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is, I mean, I can tell you like that. I think I started picking up X-Men like right before like Paul Smith started and like John Romita Jr. They were both kind of like drawing the book, and then I remember I came across the Dark Phoenix trade, you know, and I was like heavily into John Byrne at this time. I think I'd been reading maybe Alpha Flight and Fantastic Four, and I knew that Alpha Flight had some sort of connection to the X-Men, but I had never read those issues. And I remember reading the Dark Phoenix trade and just being like, wow, this is awesome. You know, a lot of it having to do with John Byrne's art, and I think Terry Austin was inking those. I mean, I have to say that a lot of my comic book reading habits, the reason I started reading because I was just really into the art. And there were certain artists like John Byrne who just like some, yeah, John Byrne rules, or he used to.
He certainly did.
Yeah, and he was the first, I think, like really big sort of superstar artist that just tapped something in my brain where I was just like, huh, there's something about this that I love. So, you know, once I read that Dark Phoenix trade and you had that whole like, you know, the death of Jean Grey, you knew, and like you said, like in the mid 80s, they kept referring back to that. And they even did that like anniversary issue where it was like, you know, they had the whole Madeline Pryor stuff where, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, like Jean Grey and Cyclops in the comics, you know, they were like, yeah, they were like in love.
Sorry, I'm gonna have
No,
to.
it's totally fine. But yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, like Jean Grey and Scott Sumner, Cyclops and Marvel Girl were in love since they were like teenagers, since they joined the school, and then she died, and then
Yes.
later on he meets somebody who looks, gasp, exactly.
Exactly like her.
Yeah, and so the question was like that kept going on, was she a clone? Was she a reincarnated? And they did that one issue with Mastermind where, you know, they pit all of the X-Men against Cyclops, which is like a comic that everyone forgets, you know, because everyone's like, Cyclops is lame, but he uses all the knowledge that he has against the X-Men to kind of stop them and take them down, you know, and figure out the mystery. And so, like, I remember that was like, okay, it seemed like they just put a cap on the whole Madeline Pryor thing, like, at that point. And then, yeah, and then
And
Inferno.
then came Inferno,
Yeah, and
and
she's like
for
the
me,
Goblin Queen, and like, oh, I remember being really mad about that. Yeah.
yeah. So for me, that was it. That was the end of it because I was like, yeah, you know, like they dealt with it in a really satisfying way, and then they proceeded to take a shit all over everything that like had come before it. And so I couldn't get behind that, and that was why I left the X-Men.
You know what? You have a greater strength of character than I do because I was such an ex-whore for the longest time, and I just stuck with it no matter what, because they were smart enough. They kept introducing like these amazing, like Mark, these amazing artists like Mark Silvestri, Jim Lee, and it was just like, you know, as long as they had like Joe, what's his face, Maduria, or I don't know how to pronounce his last name. They kept introducing like all these like really interesting artists, and
But
you
at the
know.
same time, I do think that ex-whore was probably actually a legitimate title at some point, you know?
Probably, you know, but I loved the X-Men. I mean, I read X-Men, Uncanny X-Men. I didn't have the cash when I was a teenager to like pick up all the ancillary, like, you know, like Magic and like, you know, all the miniseries, the Wolverine and Kitty Pryde and all that stuff. But I was hardcore into the X-Men, but for a long time, and I think I could tell you exactly when I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm done. And I'll never forget it. I think it was like into the Jim Lee, Chris Claremont run, where they did a thing where Magneto at this point was so powerful that he sucks like the adamantium
Oh, out of Wolverine, yeah.
out of Wolverine, and like through his pores or whatever, and you discover that Wolverine had the claws like all the time. And they were just coated with the enemy. They were like bone claws. And for some reason, in my head, it just went snap. And I was like, that's it. That's bullshit. Like, there was something about like him having like bone claws from the beginning. Because, you know, it had always been that Wolverine like was given like steel claws, like his power was. And then the other thing too that really bugged me about that issue is that they had established a long time ago that adamantium was like quote unquote non-magnetic. So so that Magneto couldn't control, you know, the adamantium. And I just remember, because at that point, like in the 90s, not just in the X-Men book, but in the Spider-Man books, you just had writers that were just like, fuck it, I don't care. We're just going to do whatever we want. And that's what happened with the X-Men books. And I think Chris Claremont, you know, was probably starting to get fed up with things, and there was like all this editorial interference, and who knows, his ego was like out of control. There were probably a lot of factors, but I just remember that was the moment where I stopped collecting them consistently, where, you know, I had to have them on my pull list every week, you know what I mean? Or every month. It was just like, I'm done. This is bullshit. I'm fucking done with you people. And
You know what? I was done too until Grant Morrison's run on New X-Men.
That was
tremendously entertaining.
I thought it was very interesting. I mean, it didn't exactly go the way, like, I mean, the way it ended up was kind of not so satisfying. I won't ruin it for everyone again, I think there were problems with like him and editorial, you know, it just seems like editorial keeps getting involved. But just going back a little bit, I think that the luster started to sort of like really fade off of the X-Men. You know, you had said that it was Wolverine. I actually think it's when they introduced Rachel Sumner's, you know, like the time traveling, you know, they couldn't let the Days of Future Past go, which, you know, kind of like dovetails into what we're talking about, because I actually think that the Days of Future Past thing is, well, for Marvel, was one of the greatest things that ever happened, because it just turned into a money machine for them. But for me as a fan, it just turned the whole thing into like a giant confusing mess, you know, where it was like continuities and timelines and this mutant and that mutant.
And I think it was like a fabulous story for that two issues that they did it.
Oh, it was great.
But then, again, it's like for some reason, you know, instead of, you know, telling new stories with it, they just, it's, and this is a complaint that we always have about, you know, again, going back to the well of like everything that came before, you know, it's the problem that, you know, I had with the last Star Trek movie, you know, it's like that it entirely relied on our goodwill about Wrath of Khan, to advance its thing. And, you know, and with this one, it's like, you know, with a lot of the comic storylines, it like, okay, you know, if you loved that, you know, if you loved that storyline we had before, well, then, you know, this is us going back to that and re-examining it. But this time from another character's point of view, or this time, you know, with a variant cover. And,
I remember being really excited over the Rachel Summers thing, because like she came back, and I think that she was like, she had these weird like face tattoos, and she was like a hound. So the Sentinels would use her to hunt other mutants. And there was all this like, you know, tragic underpinnings on the character, and it just went nowhere. I think at the end of one issue, she just kind of like disappeared. And then she like, and then she became like a member of Excalibur or something. And it was just like, it was almost like, what do we do with this character?
Well, there was like more than one at some point. I think same with you know, Psylocke, you know, like like more than one of them. And and then of course there was Cable, you know, who you need a huge, you know, degree in like astrophysics to even figure out that dude's timeline. It got really messy, which is like, well, one of the things that I was really surprised about with this movie. In a way, I feel like this movie sort of simplified the X-Men timeline and made it a little easier to understand going forward rather than complicating it.
I mean, I guess, you know, we could talk about the movie now. I mean, I really feel, I liked it. I liked it a lot. But like, and you and I had a small conversation like the weekend that it came out. Obviously, this is like a week later. You know, I liked it. My biggest problem with it is that I've never just been crazy about these X-Men movies. You know what I mean? I've never been like, these things are awesome. They're so faithful to the source material. You know, I think that, you know, the first X-Men movie came out in a time where it was like, they didn't want to take chances. They didn't want to go too crazy, you know, and they didn't want to go outside the box too much. So they sort of like gave you like, you know, they gave you Wolverine and they gave you Rogue, who I thought, like, Anna Paquin always thought was the worst casting of Rogue ever. I just think that it was like one of the biggest casting mistakes in cinematic history, because I just don't think she had the personality to pull Rogue off, or the, you know, the just presence, you know what I'm saying? And or even the physical attractiveness, you know, pardon me, I'm a male chauvinist, but you know, she just didn't seem like, to me, it was like an Eliza Dushku type would have been Rogue or something.
Well, they took, you know, they took this character who, you know, was always sort of an adult, you know, turned her into a kid. You know, what they essentially did was splice the character of Jubilee and Rogue together into creating, you know, this, you know, new character that they then called Rogue.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a the first one doesn't hold up as well as the second one does. The first one, you know, and honestly, going back to the Wolverine character, the first one relies heavily on Hugh Jackman, you know.
Well, they all do, don't you think?
Well, I agree, but especially the first one. I don't think that, I mean, they knew that, you know, they really lucked out when they cast him.
The part
could have gone to any number of other people who would have been, you know, interesting. But, I mean, this is a guy who just really, like, took it and threw himself into it and, you know, just owns that character now.
He was the second choice, too. He wasn't the first choice. Another actor had been cast and couldn't do it because the days on like Mission Impossible 2 ran over. What was the guy's name? Doug Ray Scott. Yeah, Doug Ray Scott. Yeah, yeah. And talk about that guy kicking himself in the ass. I mean, I have no idea what would have happened if he had been Wolverine. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's almost like Robert Downey Jr. with Iron Man, where it's like, who is going to play Wolverine after Hugh Jackman? You know, I mean, Hugh Jackman is basically like the Sean Connery of Wolverine, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, you've got, I think everyone else was pretty much, you know, better cast than Anna Paquin was too.
Yeah, I didn't like, you know, that's the thing. It was the fanboy in me where I was like, why is Scott younger than Jean Grey? And I thought Jean Grey, you know who I would have cast as Jean Grey is, let me see if I have the name right. It's a Laura Pepperon or Pepper. You know who I'm talking about? From that 70s show. I mean, she's a redhead, you know, she's very attractive, and she would have been the same age as Cyclops. So there's a part of me that feels like Bryan Singer. I know there's a part of me that feels that like Bryan Singer, like tends to cast his friends, you know, as opposed to who's really right for the part, or somebody who he, I guess, really likes. That's just my assumption. I haven't heard anything to back that up.
I've got no qualms against Femke Jensen, you know.
Really?
What
about What's-Her-Face's Storm, Halle Berry?
Because I thought... yeah, that's pretty bad.
Angela Bassett would have rocked that part.
Yeah, and you know, it's honestly, it's not like the she's not... not necessarily, not that she's not well written, it's much as that like that part is just so tiny compared to everybody else. You know, like that's, and if anything, like that's sort of the one thing that I feel like the movies haven't succeeded as well as the comics, is that the X-Men were always a very sort of international,
true,
you know, like, you know, they had like, you know, people from Africa, they had, you know, there's minorities on the team, you know, it's like they were like sort of an integral, you know, they were brothers beyond, you know, their skin color because of this, you know, thing that had affected them and turned them into a new type of humanity, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas in the movies, like, you know, you end up with a bunch of, you know, white people.
Yeah, and Americans for the
Yeah.
most, pretty much, except for Nightcrawler. Yeah, they're all Americans. I mean, Halle Berry tries to. I've watched the first two in the past couple of weeks, and Halle Berry tries to pull off the accent in the first one, but by the second one, it's just gone. Like, it's
Yeah.
just totally gone. It's just like, screw it, don't even worry about it. Which, I mean, whatever. I mean, that's the thing is they really hinge their hopes on Hugh Jackman, which obviously he's got a powerful personality, but you can't tell me that none of those other actors could take center stage for a little while. You know what I
Oh
mean?
yeah. I mean, we've seen what's his name? The guy who played Cyclops, James
Marsden.
Marsden. James
Yeah.
Marsden. He's a fabulous actor, man.
Yeah.
That guy is tremendous.
Yeah,
And
he's a really good
you
actor.
know, which is why, you know, one of the reasons why I hated X3 so much, you know, because you know, like he's in the movie for 15 seconds and then he's just killed, you know. And it's not
Yeah.
even like, you know, a dignified death or anything. He's just, you know, sort of summarily killed by the Phoenix Force.
It's so funny to me how many people hate X3 because when I saw it in the theater, and this is the one that I really wanted to get to before this podcast, but I
Yeah.
just found myself with no time to watch like three movies like within the past couple of weeks because I don't know, things were busy. But I remember seeing it in the theater, and at that point, the X-Men books and everything was so convoluted. I was like, why is everyone, this is no different than the comic book for me. They do crazy, stupid shit all the time. Like, why is everyone so upset? I mean, there were elements that I really liked about the third one. I mean, look, it's not Shakespeare, it's not the best written movie or whatever. I mean,
Yeah.
they take liberties with the Phoenix, but I mean, I don't see like where like I just
Well,
and Bryan Singer's listed as a producer on it, so he
Well,
must have had some input or something. Now, he couldn't have been completely removed,
I don't know. I just know that for me, it felt again like they just sort of crapped over what they did with the second movie. You know, the second movie, you know, she sacrifices herself so that, you know, Scott can live. And then in the second movie, boom, you know, oh, by the way, he's dead now. You know, it's, and, you know, and we're moving on. And it just, for me, it just felt too much like they were trying to cram way too much spectacle into, you know, this movie at the expense of the character and plot. Because that, you know, at least at the first two movies, there are a few moments where those characters do get to breathe just a little bit. Like in the first movie, there's that wonderful sequence where, you know, Professor X is showing Wolverine the school, you know, introducing to him, you know, and you've got that great, you know, sense of like, wow, like look at the possibility of this place, you know. And that's what sort of sucks him in, you know, the idea of a home. No? And like, you know, they touch on that in the first two movies. In the third movie, just like didn't care about all of that. And then I felt that the problems of X3 then went on like to become magnified 100 times in that Wolverine, that first Wolverine solo movie, which is essentially all it was an excuse to have Wolverine versus the Blob, Wolverine versus, you know, this guy. You know, it was just a bunch of superhero fights with like a very loose story to connect it. And, you know, it didn't do anything for me,
Well,
you
it's
know?
interesting because I think you make a good point, and that's the thing is in the third one, I feel that there was a lot of spectacle, which I felt was lacking from especially the first one, where I felt like a lot of the set pieces and the action pieces were kind of like lackluster. And the second one had picked up a little on that, and maybe that's why, again, I feel like there's a lot of fans out there who import a lot of like gravity to the comic books that isn't necessarily there, you
Yeah.
know what I'm saying? And or isn't always there. And the third one I felt like pulled off a lot of like really interesting stuff, kind of maybe trying to go in a different direction. And yeah, maybe some characters weren't as fleshed out as others, or there was definitely some probably stupid stuff, but I remember that in the first one, there was a lot of stupid stuff. Like the whole Statue of Liberty
Well,
plot. Like, I was like, oh, come on. This isn't the X-Men. That's just
yeah.
lame.
Well, that's been sort of their sort of downfall I mean, and again, like that's sort of lame. Like, oh, look, they're having a fight on a national monument. Woo-hoo! Reached it, and again, that reaches its like. Again, it's like they just take that to a ridiculous extreme in X3 with the Golden Gate Bridge, which made no sense at all. I mean, it's like, really, like he couldn't just have like flown the people over on the cars or something. No, he's got to levitate the Golden Gate Bridge over to Alcatraz,
Well, but that's the thing, though, is I mean, that's the thing. My understanding of Magneto, is that he needs to show off. And I think in this movie, this last one, that's evident. You know what I mean? And in the set piece where, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, opening weekend, where he lifts a fucking whole stadium, using his magnetic powers. I mean, to me, and it's evident, in the first one, and where, he holds all the police hostage with their own guns. Like Magneto has an ego. He's got to show off. So I didn't really have a problem with him. Like, if anything, I was like, wow, that's really cool. He's lifting the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, again, I have not seen it since I saw it in the theaters. I have it on DVD somewhere, which, says a lot about my hoarder status. But, I mean, honestly, I want to see it again because I'm really curious how it would play out. And it sucks that I'm not going to be able to watch it until after this podcast.
That's all
But,
right. Check it out and see if it got better with time.
but
But I have a feeling that I just remember that, I'm the juggernaut bitch line. I mean, like it was just like, oh, come on.
I don't remember that. Like, I honestly don't remember that. I think I remember being like, it's the ju he looks like the juggernaut and he's got the dome on his head. Like, I think I was kind of more impressed with maybe a little bit of that sort of thing. The character design was faithful, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I think at that point, like, I mean, I remember really liking the second one when I saw it, and then seeing it on DVD and being like, oh, this wasn't as good as I remember it.
Well,
And then
what did you think of First Class?
I loved it. I mean, I really liked it. I thought that, A, I liked the fact that they could prove that they could do a movie without Wolverine. That was the first thing, especially after that. Like, I have no defense for that first Wolverine movie. Like, everything you said, I saw it on cable. I didn't even see it in the theater because I knew just looking at the trailer it was going to be bad. And then and I saw it on cable, like HBO or something, and it literally is one of those things that just got kind of wiped from my mind. I remember a couple of bad things, but I just remember being like, wow, this is really terrible. And I could have pulled the Batman and Robin and not seen it ever. Like, I've never seen it and been okay. But like the First Class thing, I really like them going back into the past. I really, first of all, you've got McAvoy and what's his face? The guy that plays Magneto. Yeah,
Fassbender.
Fassbender. Like two of probably the greatest actors out there, right? Young actors out there right now. And, the Cuban Missile Crisis and all that stuff. The things that I thought were like corny were like, Mutant Proud and the stuff with Jennifer What's Her Face, like as Mystique,
Yeah,
Oscar winner.
that's been sort of an interesting turn, I think, because Mystique, has been, sort of long-running villain, but like not like a huge fan favorite or anything.
Yeah,
But
yeah, yeah.
in the movies, that character has really sort of taken on its own life,
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence. Well, that's the thing that bothers me too, is that they've spent all this time focusing on characters. You've got Rogue, you've got Wolverine, you've got, Professor X, Magneto, but there's all these other characters that, in the second one we got Nightcrawler, but Alan Cumming didn't want to return for whatever reason. The makeup or whatever is just a pain in the ass.
The
But I,
tail, the
yeah,
tail.
the tail, the tail always getting in his way, tripping over the tail. But I feel like Mystique, really? Like, I don't give a crap about Mystique. You know what I mean? Like, and I never really did it unless she was like a villain. I mean, I think they did some interesting stuff with her, but that was kind of, and then I did have a problem with her like being raised with Professor X. Like, did that happen in the comic books? Maybe it did, but it was long after I'd given up
No,
on them.
I don't think it did. And I think that, it's just something, again, like they've definitely set the movie world, apart from the comic book
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. But you know, going back in time and doing an X-Men movie in the past, first of all, it was really cool because like a lot of the stuff, like you know, the Hellfire Club and everything, like those designs just make sense in the 60s, you know. And you know, it's like they, I think it was a nice shot in the arm for the franchise. And again, you're right, like the fact that it could have a story that was carried without Wolverine, that was a big important thing for them, which then brings us to this movie.
I mean, this one, you know, X-Men Days of Futures Past. I mean, I gotta say, for the opening, I was really very impressed with that opening sequence. I mean, that really, this, that was like, if anything, what I feel like what's happening now with the X-Men movies, finally, you know, even with X-Men First Class, you know, it was good, but you kind of got the sense, like, again, maybe why I liked X3 or elements of X3, which is like they were shooting for the fences with certain set pieces, you know what I mean? They were trying to go, which is what, you know, Marvel, you know, with the Avengers and Iron Man and stuff like that, and Captain America, they've just shot for the fences. And I don't feel like the X-Men movies have really been that ambitious. And I think if there's one thing that Marvel, the Marvel Studios movies have done, is made the, I mean, this has been the most ambitious one of all, don't you think?
Oh,
Of the
absolutely.
X-Men movies.
Yeah, that opening, first of all, you had a great, you know, it drops you right into this, you know, sort of dystopian future with the Sentinels, you know, hunting the mutants down and killing them. And for the first time, you really get to see the mutants using their powers without any holding back, you
Yeah,
know,
absolutely.
and not, you know, not really trying to protect anyone. They're just trying to, you know, save themselves. And you had some really great use of like some of those, you know, second or third tier characters. You know, you had
Well,
the,
you had a lot of fan favorites. You had Blink, you
yeah.
know, which was a great character. She was in a book called The Exiles for a long time, which was a great, like, all, it was sort of like Quantum Leap meets the X-Men. They would go to like different alternate universes and try to prevent stuff from happening. And she's like a, I guess she's like a fan favorite, like, you know, Colossus, finally.
Marvelous power for movies too, like with the portal stuff. I mean, like, you know, that just translates so well to a movie that, you know, that was a great idea to go with her. Yeah, Colossus done really well.
Yeah, fantastic.
You know, you have Sunspot.
Sunspot, yeah. Sunspot. Iceman riding on the sled, you know, the toboggan thing, which is, that's what I'm saying, is like that set piece. And well, let's just talk about the Sentinel designs, right? I mean, talk about some great design. I mean, they look fucking badass. And the way that the like little pieces move around, you know, the blocks and the heads open up. I mean, that's just like it, you know, it's rare that, well, not rare, but there's stuff like Spider-Man 2, like with Dr. Octopus, where you see something in a movie and it's like, okay, they improved on like what was in the comic book, you know what I'm saying? And that Sentinel design, I feel, was like a huge improvement than anything I've ever seen in the comics.
Yeah, and what I really like too is that, you know, then by, you know, by virtue of doing the time travel thing, you went back and you had the original Sentinel design, you know, in there anyway too. So, you know, you got to have it both ways.
I mean, you know, so basically you kind of get introduced to the thing, which is like that Kitty Pryde somehow has developed, you know, time traveling powers, which is like, okay, whatever. Already you've got like my fanboy kind of like rolling his eyes, you know, at the movie. Why does it have to be Kitty Pryde?
See,
You know?
I could go with that because if she can move, you know, atomically between, you know, materials, then, you know, it's just a matter of being able to manipulate on a, you know, different level.
I get it.
I could buy that because that's the other thing too, is that, you know, by now all they've also, you know, introduced the idea of the mutations, you know,
Like evolving.
advancing and evolving themselves. So, you know, I'm willing to go with that.
Yeah, no, I went with it, but I was just like, Kitty Pryde again was another character that's never been utilized in the movies and who is like the fan favorite, like the biggest one that everyone wants to see. And again, she's kind of like relegated to the sidelines as sort of like a plot device, which
Right.
was a little bit disappointing to me. I mean, I really felt like obviously, I mean, I guess there's so much stuff that you can do with the script, and obviously because it's the movies and Hugh Jackman is a big star and a big presence, they send Wolverine back to the 70s or the 60s or whatever.
Right.
But it would have been kind of cool if she'd have gone with him, and then you could have had that interplay between them,
Yeah.
So.
But in this case, they just decided to go with Hugh Jackman back in time, which worked really well. He definitely sold the 70s, feel of everything, and one of the things I really loved about it is like when going back in the 70s, you've got those fabulous outfits that look like they're from the Claremont era
Well, the belt
books.
buckle and his jacket, like Wolverine. I mean, that's the thing, as I said to Amy. Well, first of all, like the whole plot is that they're stuck in a dystopian future and they're going to try and send Wolverine back to his younger body before he became an X-Man or, when he was a kind of an amnesiac so that he can stop a plot from occurring that sets the events of the future in motion, right? I mean, that's basic. It's sort of like the Terminator almost, but which, speaking of which, did this come before the Terminator? Like Days of Future Past, like the comics. I think they
Yeah,
did.
it came before. Yeah, it came before the
I wouldn't be
Terminator.
surprised if
But
Jim Cameron read an X-Men comic book.
well,
James
yeah.
Cameron. But
He seemed, he's we know he was a Marvel fan because he wanted to do Spider-Man
yeah, that's true.
for so long.
That's true. But
But
then he wakes up in se what year was it? 72, I think?
73.
76? 73? Okay. And he, first of all, the dude is ripped. Like, what the hell is Hugh Jackman eating, man? It's like he's just eating steel bars or something. Like, he was totally ripped. And he turns around and Amy, my wife, was just like shocked. She's like, oh my God. She's like, that doesn't even look attractive, like all the veins and stuff. And I was like, whatever. He looks just like the comic. Like, he looked just like the comic. He looked like a Sam Keith drawing or something. It was like unbelievable. And then, like you said, he puts on the outfit and he's got the big belt buckle, like the big sort of Western, belt and
The
the
leather
jeans and
jacket
the
and
jacket. Yeah, I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right. That's so funny. And then the action kind of just starts off from there, right?
Yeah, and then he's tasked with basically finding the young Charles Xavier and convincing him of what needs to happen. And that's where we find out that basically Xavier's like lost his way.
Well, the big challenge is to get Xavier and Magneto to work together at a point where they hate each other, right? Yeah, that's what they tell him.
They hate each other, but the bigger challenge ends up being the biggest challenge ends up being trying to get Charles Xavier to believe in his dream again,
Yeah, his comp Wolverine tracks him down at the mansion, and I guess they had formed a school, right? And then the school fell apart or something, and so Xavier's like ego and confidence is shattered. Like he's basically almost like the equivalent of like sort of like a drug addict, except he's addicted to the drugs that give him his legs back, right? And he's holed up with Beast, Hank McCoy, and
Who's a little bit of an addict himself too,
yeah,
because he's
exactly.
using this to appear normal.
Yeah, using the serum to keep him from turning into the blue furry beast that he's mutated into. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in there when Magneto gets to the mansion where he's trying to convince him, and I love the bits of like where he says like you taught me, so let me teach you and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like there was a lot of good, I think there's a lot of good writing, a lot of good dialogue in this movie in general,
And what I really like is that it sort of ties all of the stuff together. The sort of the promise of the first movie, is that Wolverine would have a home and he would have someone, who understands him and everything.
Yeah.
And now he's getting to the point, you know, where that's threatened. And you see, you know, you've seen him grow and change up to that point, and you know, to the point where he's willing to fight, you know, not just physically fight, which is what he's, you know, best at, but to, you know, to
He's the
try
best he
to
is at
try
what he does.
and what he does isn't very pretty,
Yeah.
but you know, I thought it did a great job of tying those first two Singer movies in with especially X-Men First Class,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
it, you know, it really, like I said, it did, it felt like it was wrapping up everything that had come before it while opening it up for possible, you know, new adventures that hopefully will, you know, be on a level of this quality.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the thing is that, you know, I mean, at some point, you know, Ian McKellen's getting older, and I think Ian McKellen is sick too. Like, I think he might have been diagnosed with some sort of cancer or something. So I think he said that he might be retiring. So at some point, you've got to just completely recast Magneto, right? If you're going to use the older version. And you know, Patrick Stewart as well. I mean, I don't know how long he even wants to do them, but I think that this that's my little bit of disappointment with this is I feel like they could have had an opportunity to sort of reboot the universe, which is kind of what I wanted before these movies. I wanted a hard reboot. And this time I was like, okay, well,
Well,
maybe something, you know, I don't know.
it's sort of a soft reboot in a way, because you know
Yeah.
you're tied in with now with the, you know, the First Class movie, you know, when, you know, spoiler alert, you know, it works and they manage to save, you know, the future, and you know, Logan bounces back to, you know, our current time period,
Yeah.
and you know, you get to see, you know, you get to see the school again the way he, you know, the way he was introduced to it the first time, you know,
Yeah.
with kids running around, and they're all different races and types, and you know, it's just like, oh yeah, you know, like it feels like the possibilities are open again after, you know, all this like sort of, you know, Sturm und Drang, you know, stuff that they'd rained down on them, you know, with their version of the Dark Phoenix saga.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's the thing is kind of along the way, though. Like the whole thing is like really entertaining. Like let's talk about Quicksilver.
Oh
Like, you
yeah.
know, 'cause at some point they do convince, you know, Xavier that they've got to go. Well, you know, the whole, you know, if you were going to put like the most dangerous man in the world somewhere, they put him under the Pentagon. I mean, I don't know. That was a little bit of like basically Magneto, I guess, has been captured after the events of First Class. And they've had him in prison for a long time. Like, when did First Class happen? You're talking Cuban Missile Crisis,
Yeah, First
so
Class was in the early
like early
60s
60s. So he's been in jail for like
for
10 years.
nearly 10 years. Yeah,
Yeah, or
because
more.
he, well, what year was Kennedy assassinated? That
It was
was
like 63.
64, 63. Yeah, so
63.
he's been in jail since the Kennedy assassination because
Yeah.
they've accused him
Oh, that's when
of
they caught him. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
they accused him of doing it when in fact he was trying to save him.
Yeah, trying to save him, which that was really funny to me because I just kept thinking like, dude, don't help because that was a really awesome headshot. You know what I mean? Like if
Yeah.
you look at Kennedy, like that was the thing that I was talking about my wife after the movie. I was like, no, maybe you shouldn't have done anything because, you know, if you look at the Zapruder film or you know anything about the Kennedy movie, that shot was a very good shot. Like, you know, I mean, there was no, so it was like the whole thing of like Magneto trying to like arc the bullet or stop it. I was like, no. That just like that didn't work. That was a little silly to me, especially when they were like Kennedy was like a mutant, and I was like, whatever, you know. But the whole they go and they Wolverine knows where Quicksilver is, right?
Yes,
Yeah,
he
Pietro,
was aware of, you know, where he was at
because
that
he's from
time.
the future. Yeah, because Wolverine's from the future, and they track down Quicksilver,
Although
who.
he's Peter in this movie,
Yeah, he's
not,
Pietro. He doesn't say Quicksilver, right? Or
and that,
Pete.
yeah, he's
Peter.
Peter in this movie, and
But
his
his
sister,
last name is Maximoff,
yeah, and
right?
I don't know, because I think he's
No,
just
it said
introduced
it
as
on the
Peter.
It said it on the mailbox.
And
like
when
they
walk
it is.
Up. I know that. Yeah. I know that in the credits, his sister is listed as Peter's sister.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Not as Wanda. So,
that's interesting.
So there's no Scarlet Witchery going on in the X-Men universe.
But they do mention her. Like Wolverine says something. He said something like, "Oh, I knew her sister. She was a pain in the ass," or like,
"Yeah,
she
yeah.
did. She was did something crazy." So yeah, they go and recruit him. You know, and he's basically like a ne'er-do-well, right? He's using his speed powers to like commit petty crimes.
He's just a stupid punk kid, really. You know,
yeah,
he's
yeah.
just you know he yeah exactly. He uses it for petty crimes to, you know, but.
Because he's bored.
Yeah, he's bored. I mean, that's one of the most interesting ideas of the, you know, I love it when they throw in a big idea. And the big idea is that, you know, that everything moves so slowly for him that, you know, he just constantly needs some sort of stimulus or he's bored.
Yeah, yeah. Which is something from the comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah, from like, I think it was X-Force or,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, yeah.
Which then actually what's awesome is it informs his fighting style too.
Yeah.
Know? Like
yeah.
His fighting style is all about, you know, what sort of wacky, you know, shenanigans he can pull because it's hilarious to him, you know? You know,
which is like the best sequence in the whole movie, quite honestly. Like when they go to break Magneto out and Quicksilver does his thing. I mean, I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but I mean, my audience was going nuts.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it was just really well done. First of all,
yeah.
Perfect choice of music.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know,
Jim Croce. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The Jim Croce Time in a Bottle
Time
song.
In a bottle. Yeah.
And it's really well staged. And the character, you know, and the actor really pulls it off well. It's the guy from American Horror Story.
Yeah,
right?
American Horror Story.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Fabulous, fabulous job. And you know, it's just that sequence is definitely a standout sequence. It's one of those, you know, X-Men moments that you just always kind of wanted to see. You didn't realize you wanted to see it until
yeah,
you saw
yeah,
it. And
yeah,
it's just like,
exactly.
Wow, I want to see a Quicksilver scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just great. And it's funny because I know that you and I had some, everyone did, had huge concerns about Quicksilver after seeing that outfit and the Carl's Jr. ad and all that nonsense, you know, and it just turns out to be, you know, completely unfounded because he turned out to be probably, yeah, one of the best characters in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, the only thing that I kept thinking of when I was watching that was like, dude, Joss Whedon better have something really good up his sleeve because this was awesome, you know,
yeah.
Whatever they do with their Quicksilver.
Well, if the effects, you know, that we saw at the end of, you know, the last, what was that? What was the last Marvel movie? It was Captain America.
Captain America.
Yeah, Captain America. You know, like it seems that they're taking like a completely different like approach to how they're doing the effects, you know, like having the way he was doing sort of the lightning flash, you know, movement and things like that. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It's going to be a different Quicksilver, and you've never really had two versions of the same character in the Marvel movies before. So yeah, this is kind of new territory, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I understand that Marvel can't say mutant. Is that right?
I'm not sure. You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think that Fox owns the rights to the mutants. So they're going to be referred to in a different way. So they might have a completely different origin in Avengers too.
Well, I think they will, but I also think that the characters are shared.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think, one of the smart deals that Marvel made when they, you know, sold the X-Men. I think that there were certain characters that were Avengers that could possibly be used, you know,
mm-hmm.
in Marvel movies. Like they didn't completely give away Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. You know, they said like, well, we can share them or something. That's my understanding of it.
Which is great because I really want to see. I want to see a romance between the Scarlet Witch and the Vision, you know, like that was always a really cool
or Hawkeye
thing.
Cause she started off with Hawkeye kind of. Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
And there was always sort of a little love triangle, not love triangle, but he was always with Black Widow in the beginning, because
Oh,
she
that's
was a
right.
villain. Yeah, she was a villain, and she's the one who like wooed him over to the dark side, you know. So it'd be interesting to see if they try and do some sort of like, you know, romantic triangle, or like the Scarlet Witch gets jealous. I mean, not Scarlet Witch, Black Widow gets jealous or something. Yeah. But I mean, so what about Peter Dinklage as Trask? What did you think about him?
Oh, he
He's
was fabulous.
fantastic.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
that's the nice thing about I think they learned this with First Class, is when you cast really good actors,
Yeah.
then you get much better results than just sort of casting, a no-name person who, kind of looks like the character, maybe they're like a wrestler or something you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you've got to cast good actors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the one of the other things I'm sort of excited about, is that that these stories are now becoming attractive to, people who are quality actors.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to go where the money is, you know, and you got to go where, you know, where the quality product is. And, you know, I mean, you can't deny that. I mean, it really is amazing, isn't it? It really is just like what the fuck? People used to make fun of us for reading these things. I mean, at least they used to make fun of me. You know, I was an outcast, and now they're like these giant, huge properties that, you know, big A-list actors. Again, going back to the Winter Soldier, like, in your wildest imagination, would you have ever seen Robert Redford in a Marvel Comics movie?
Yeah.
Never.
No,
It's like we stepped through the looking glass. We're like in some weird alternate reality, man.
that we made, man.
Yeah, I guess.
At some point you go back in time to talk to your younger self, and you get some shit done. That's all I can guess.
It's crazy. But so basically the whole plot ends up being, once they get Magneto out, is they have to stop Mystique from assassinating Trask, because
Right.
that is the event that is going to set things into motion and, you know, basically start this like Sentinel War. That
Right.
or start the event, which that's where it kind of gets fucked up with me, Paul, because I'm like, but wait a minute, what about all the first two movies? Didn't those take place in the 90s? There's no Sentinel War, like, you know, and then everything that happens in the end. So I mean, like, as great as all this stuff does, and as you're saying, it's like kind of like a soft reboot. By the time you get to that fantastic sequence at the end, where, you know, Magneto has basically like invading the, what is it, the White House? I
Yeah,
can't, yeah, the White House,
he
and he
basically
drops a
dropped the
stadium.
stadium around the White House to establish a perimeter, and
Yeah.
he's taken over the Sentinels, and he's,
Yeah. And so
getting,
that's 73.
yeah.
So when we're looking at the first X-Men movie, and I've watched it, like they're still talking about like mutants in the shadows. Like people don't really know us that well. Like
Yeah.
this isn't like a big thing. Dude, if all that stuff went down, like the fantastic sequence where Mystique does try to assassinate him and then
Yeah.
gets thrown out a window, and then the Magneto goes on television in front of the world, and he's going to basically, you know, kill the president and his cabinet, you know, and his generals, you know, firing squad style, and has taken over all the Sentinels. Like, what are we talking about here? I mean, are we talking about, like, is this movie like, it's not even a reset. Is it just like a total alternate? Are we in like a total alternate universe from the first three movies at this point? Like,
No,
do the first three movies even count?
I'd say yes, because one of the things that this movie did is that it completely erased the third one's from
Yeah.
existence. I mean, everything. Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what we've seen happen, is it has erased that timeline.
But I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, it's erased that timeline, but from the beginning in the Sentinel era, is this whole movie completely removed from the first two? Like, are we talking about a subtle alternate reality from the very beginning? Like, did Wolverine, when he went back in time, go into a different timeline? He didn't go into the timeline that first two movies. You know what I'm saying?
No,
He went.
he went before that. So in
No, but
essence,
what I'm saying is, like, yeah, I guess. So.
in essence, the first three X-Men movies have never happened in this timeline that they're in.
Yeah, that I guess that's what I'm saying. So like it, you, I guess you're right. Like I guess I never thought about it that way because there was part of my brain that keeps trying to fit it in with the first three movies. But I think you're. I don't even think this is a soft reset, Paul. Now that I'm thinking of it, I think that this is like a super hard reset.
Yeah, essentially, the only thing that's carrying over is Wolverine. I mean, if you think about it, he's the only one who has a memory of the other timeline, although Charles does too. Charles knows that something's wrong. And it's kind of nice because it does sort of tie back thematically into that first movie where Charles is talking to, Wolverine as if they've known each other for years and years, and and he's got no knowledge of that. And then that final conversation that they have plays off of that, where it's like, okay, now they're really talking to each other again, like they understand each other for the first time in this whole sort of saga, and they're the only ones who know what sort of really has happened.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I think that they really just snuck in a way of like, now we can just, we can, like, it's not, you can use what's familiar, but you could just totally go in a new direction. You don't have to be a slave to the first three. At first I kept thinking like, because I was just watching the movie and I hadn't really thought about it, but now talking it out with you, it seems like they've just like they slipped something in. They were just like, this is like Wolverine in the very beginning in the Sentinel future has affected the whole timeline by going back at all, and then the events in so the whole thing is like not even connected to the first three, like
That's
in
right.
any way. It's just tangential.
That's
Like
right. The
these are
only
characters that you know. That's crazy.
thing that carries over is Wolverine's character and Charles Xavier, really. I mean, those are the only two things that honestly carry over because, by going back and resetting this, it moved up that whole, just what you were talking about. It moved up the introduction of the human race to mutant kind by decades,
By 20 years, yeah.
and it made it in a way that was impossible to ignore and sort of set the boundaries of, sort of what was to follow, So, yeah,
Dude, that's fucking crazy.
it was
So
a
this is just like the X-Men comics.
yes, it is. It's crazy and it's convoluted and and it only makes sense if you're super invested in those characters.
Or you've read a lot of X-Men comics. Because quite honestly, like, dude, like, so that Sentinel future that, I mean, okay, so he stops it, right? They stop it in the end, and all these changes occur, but that Sentinel future still had to happen. So now you're talking about, like, I mean, they've just basically, they haven't said it to the audience, they haven't overtly said it, but you're talking about, like, multiple, at least three timelines at this point. That's fu This is just like the X-Men comics. That's crazy. So they just did, they just by, I mean, they've just, I mean, it's the most faithful thing ever. And I don't even know if they meant to do it on purpose.
Probably not, which is why it's so faithful, that the reason why the X-Men comic book got fucked up like over so many years and having so many problems was because of all the different writers and editors and artists that they had working on it, who were constantly tweaking with things and everything like that. And it's sort of the same thing that's happened with the film, thing. Not to the same extent, but to a pretty large degree, there are plot holes, there are, massive continuity problems and everything, but somehow it still hangs together. And again, I feel like they did a great job of not necessarily tying up all the loose ends, but emotionally and thematically tying it all together in this one to the point where, like, now whatever the next X-Men movie is, I'm kind of excited about that because it seems like it's going to be something really
Big.
really big and different from, what's come before.
Dude, it's like if Bryan Singer, like Bryan Singer just reset his own fucking movies.
Yeah.
Like he just fucking said, like, I mean, and it started off with Matthew Vaughn, right? In First Class,
Yeah,
right? But
yeah.
so that timeline, so it starts with First Class because that timeline is this timeline. I mean,
Yes.
so First Class is the beginning of this alternate universe. Like, so what First Class was supposed to be the past of the first two or three movies, it isn't. It's like its own thing.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So they did reset it. My mind is blown. Like I'm blown. Like I'm fucking. And I don't even think they realized they did it. I mean, I honestly don't think they know what they did. I mean, do you think they know? I don't think they know.
I think that they're I think they do, because I feel like in a lot of ways they knew that they had to come back from a lot. I view this as Singer's sort of like, in a way, okay, this is the movie that X3 sort of should have been, in a way,
Yeah.
and I know that, like, it's interesting because it feels like he came into this hungry, it feels like he
Yeah,
came into
yeah.
this wanting to make a movie that would be popular and that people would like, and
Well, he hasn't had a hit in a very long time, you know. He hasn't had a critically acclaimed movie. He hasn't had anything that's made money. I mean, he's been kind of out of the game since Superman Returns.
And this was a really nice return to form, but at the same time, like, I also feel like, yeah, like that last Wolverine movie was really solid, and they want to roll with that and keep the momentum going
Yeah.
as long as they can have Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. Well, dude, just think about that. I mean, the fact that Singer just like, you know, took his own sort of creation, and it's almost like they did, like, you know how like Spider-Man rebooted itself and
Right.
took everything that was familiar, like Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst and the J. Jonah Jameson actor,
Right.
took everything that was familiar out of there and then just kind of like restarted, and everyone went like, oh, what? Like Singer, they must have known that they were doing this. Like Singer took everything that was familiar about the first two and third, you know, to a certain extent, and the one that everyone really liked, the First Class, and
Yeah.
he said, we're gonna start. Yeah, exactly. We're gonna start. And we're gonna reboot it, but we're gonna not get rid of the stuff that works. That's fucking
Yeah.
awesome. And
It
he has all the tools to do it because of all the X-Men time travel, blah, blah, blah stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the perfect property for that. You can't really do that with the Avengers because the Avengers has never really had stuff like, I mean, they've had Kang and, but they've never had the huge convoluted universe that the X-Men does.
Right.
That's fucking amazing.
Yep, pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I'm impressed. You know, even if they didn't mean to do it, they just did. So I hope that they take it like in a direction that, you know, because at this point, it seems to me like all bets could be off. Like you don't even need to really follow continuity all that much. Just
Right.
like tell really good stories.
Yeah, I'm super excited for the future of the X universe, because, like, honestly, after that third one and that first Wolverine movie, I felt like, yeah, you know what? Maybe it's kind of run its course,
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But First Class gave it, sort of a jolt of new life, and then this one just sort of took that and ran with it.
Well, I mean, before we end, let's talk about that last sequence with Well, first of all, okay, Magneto. I mean, Fassbender is just like, I mean, come on, the dude is kick ass. And he pulls off the outfit. You know, like what I love about Fassbender is the Magneto outfit. It's sort of a combo of the classic comic books and of the first two movies, you know. And I just love the classic sort of Kirby helmet that he's got. I mean, he's got a stature that can, you know, I mean, the scene where he gets mad at Xavier in the jet plane,
Yeah.
that was awesome.
And you know, and it's great too because he does hit that like very cool, charismatic note that Magneto needs because you know he's a leader and people follow him, you know, and they should do that for a reason. I mean, when you first introduced to him in this movie, you know, and he has that great James Brown quote, you know, I don't know karate, but I know crazy. You know, I mean, it's just he, you know, he's it's like, yeah, he's cool, you know, and yeah, he's the perfect guy for the job.
Yeah, he does great. But then, you know, and it all pays off when it's really funny because, you know, Amy, my wife, she's like, well, why did Magneto have to do all that stuff? And she's like, he's basically just like a dick, right? And I'm like, yeah, he's a dick. Like he can't suppress his own ego. He can't let somebody else take charge. He has to be the one to go forward. He's a show off.
Yeah.
He's a big ego, and so he has to, you know, be like, I'm gonna take the final stand, you know, against the humans, and he just can't help himself, you know,
Yeah.
and that's always his downfall because, like, I mean, come on, that sequence with the stadium and like dropping it around the White House. First of all, like, okay, what power levels are we talking about here? Because like, to be able to lift a whole stadium full of metal, and he didn't even seem like he was struggling at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Ian McKellen in the first movie was struggling with stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, we're
Well,
talking about a whole other
that's one
ball
of
game.
well, that's one of the interesting twists about changing the timeline is because Wolverine gets Magneto and Professor X to work together again. You know, they spend all this time together that they wouldn't have otherwise, and he allow, you know, there are scenes where he's showing him how to tap into the power and go greater than he, you know, so in a way, he creates a greater Magneto than there would have been, you know, had he not sent him back.
I mean, I have to say that, you know, the bits where, you know, Magneto takes over the Sentinels and, you know, drops the stadium. I mean, honestly, I was like, what are you people going to do now?
Yeah.
Because you're all screwed. I mean, you know, and the, you know, Ma Professor X can't do anything because he's got the helmet. And, you know, what's Mystique going to do? You know, I just was like, really, like, holy cow, this is the real deal. I mean, it's the first time we've ever seen. I mean, there was the Golden Gate Bridge thing, which was impressive, but this time it was just like, dude, you can't fight this guy. Like, how are you going to fight this guy? You know
Yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And that sequence at the end was just fantastic. And I just love what he does with Wolverine. You know, where he basically takes like some pieces of like steel rebar or whatever and like wraps him up in it and is flings him away, you know, because like that's the thing is everyone's like, oh, Wolverine's such a badass. But that's the thing is he if he's confronted with someone with that kind of power, like Magneto or say something like Thanos, he hasn't got a shot in hell. You know what I mean? So I just yeah, I think they did a lot of really good stuff. You know, especially with the climax, and yeah, I really like this movie. I mean, I don't think it's like my favorite Marvel movie, but at least what made me happy is, like I said earlier, the X-Men movies are starting to show a bit of ambition, and they're starting to like want to play in sort of like a bigger sandbox. And I think that you've got Marvel Studios to thank for that. You know, the Avengers and Captain America and, you know, Iron Man. I think that they kind of saw those movies and they're like, we can do better, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, what'd you think about the end credit sequence? I mean, you stayed around for that, right?
End credit sequence, yeah, I stayed around for that. Refresh my memory though.
What the guy built rebuilding the pyramids
Oh,
and they're
yeah,
all
that's
like
right. The
chanting. Oh, it was so great that you forgot about it.
No, the apocalypse. That's right, because I forgot. Yeah, you know, because people, everybody in the theater was like, "Who's that?" You know. Yeah. So
Well,
yeah,
he's really obscure to the public.
is sort of an obscure figure. I think it'll be interesting. Yeah, it's cool because Apocalypse is sort of a one of the great X-Men villains, but they're gonna have be taking a different route with this because the big thing, of course, in the comics was that he took the character of Angel and turned him into Archangel,
Archangel.
who became who was one of his four horsemen,
Yeah.
and Angel's been pretty much a no-show in this series except for like a couple of moments in X3, so. Yeah, we'll see what they end up doing here. My money is on them pulling in Wolverine as a horseman of the apocalypse.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I hope not. No, don't do that. I mean, they could always reintroduce Angel. That guy was good. The guy who played him in the third movie. He's a good actor. I can't remember his name, but he's done a ton of stuff. Yeah, no, I really did like because I remember Apocalypse was introduced in X-Force.
Right.
The like the Walt Simonson spin-off that when they resurrected Jean Grey. And that was a really like convoluted book too. But I was never crazy about Apocalypse, but I did like the whole four horsemen, standing on the in the sand and all that stuff, like in the distance. Like I was like, oh wow, it looks like they're gonna go all the way with this, because that's what Apocalypse is from what I remember. He's the first mutant. So So, hey, cool, it'll be good. I'll see it. Like that's the thing is, except for the first Wolverine movie, there hasn't been one of these that I've been like, I'm not gonna go see that, And I'm just glad that they pulled it off with First Class because I think that that was the movie that rejuvenated the series, that saved it from the brink of like, screw it, we're done with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Well, there you go. Any final thoughts on Days of Future Past? Days of Futures Past?
No, I just again that I really feel like it was it's cool because at the end of it just feels, feels hopeful again. That's the thing that probably one of the things that I ended up sort of turning me off about the X books is that, the sense of optimism and playfulness just disappeared, it just became really grim and gritty and convoluted, blah blah blah. And I feel like the sort of the same thing was starting to happen with the movies, but now they've embraced the fun again, and I'm a big fan of that.
I mean, they were losing their sense of humor about things for sure. Getting all and trying to shoehorn, like the Dark Phoenix saga, like big events into the movies where they didn't need to go. Like that I'll agree with, to a certain extent as far as the third one goes. But, I gotta say, this thing definitely makes me interested in the X movie franchise again. I'll go see the next one. And, but there was a time where I was very much done with the X-Men movie. So whatever they did with this one, they did right. Cool. All right. Well, this has been our Days of Future podcast. this has been Part Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian Horn, and I'm here with Paul Edwards. And thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll be here within another week with another episode of Part Time Fanboy. Bye.
Snicked.
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
And yeah, doing part-time. And yeah, doing part-time.